He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
Like, I sent out a tweet today, and, you know, people seem to agree with it. J.J. Redick is one of the hardest podcasters on coaches. Before he got a coaching gig, he was one of the few national voices who had no problem, because a lot of the, national voices in a lot of these, you know, whether it's doing analysis for games or working for Sports Center or whatever, a lot of those guys are ex-coaches. Those guys don't go at coaches. I remember listening to Jeff Van Gundy. He would and Stan Van Gundy's like this too. Those guys will do whatever it takes to avoid calling out a coach in any spot. And it's actually kind of maddening, right? Because according to those guys, coaches cannot make mistakes. And JJ was kind of this fresh antithesis to that. Calling out coaches. Hey, when are you going to run something? Hey, when are you going to do this? You can't call that timeout here. You can't do this there. You can't make that challenge there. It was great. I loved it. I kind of wonder how he feels about his performance. If podcaster JJ Redick saw a coach having the performance that head coach JJ Redick is having, how would podcaster JJ Redick analyze head coach JJ Redick? And I can't imagine he would be all that nice. All right, so let's see. We have another one here. Yeah, we do. Marley Villasenor writes, kicked ball, trip foul, two missed layups by Luka and Bron. Razor-thin margin away from calling what JJ did a bold move that tied it 2-2. I agree with you somewhat, but it's also saying he's getting pantsed as much. It's not... I would have liked the result, but I would have hated the process had he been rewarded for that gamble. I would have, you guys know me. I'm a slave to process. And I just think, knowing what we know about how hard playoff basketball is, there's a reason no other modern coach has ever done that. And we've had some stubborn ass coaches. Tom Thibodeau is currently coaching a game right now. I'm watching him right now. Mike D'Antoni had a really short rotation. Phil would have a really short rotation. Pop had only a couple of guys off of his bench that he would trust. But all of those coaches found a way to spare his key guys some minutes so that they wouldn't be complete shells of themselves at the end of games. So, yeah, like, the Lakers could have won that game. But had they, you would have just been rewarding bad process. And again, I wouldn't be complaining about the result, because cool. And I would have been absolutely heaping praise on the guys who in this hypothetical won that game. I think what we saw from those five guys is legitimately some of, and I tweeted that out at the time too, this is some of the gutsiest shit that we have ever seen in all of sports history, all of it, just focusing on the sport. That was some of the most insane thing that I've ever seen any team try to do. And they almost did it. They almost were there. But that's the thing about whittling down your margin for error with a bad decision like that, is you do wind up getting right there, but not quite all the way there. And the good news is he won't try that again. JJ, you fuck around. All right, the next one here comes from JK Productions. A 2-11 playoff record in our last three series hurts, man. Dude, I'm a Vikings fan, and this is getting ridiculous. Like, you know, I have had some playoff losses in my life. Blair Walsh's field goal miss. Nick Anderson's field goal miss. Brett Favre throwing that interception in the NFC Championship game when he had the first down right in front of him. Adrian Peterson fumbling five times in that game. We can go all the way through here. Shoot, I was born, you know, I'd like to look to see what year it was, but it's almost kind of perfect that the Hail Mary came at the expense of the Minnesota Vikings. Like, I'm telling you, I've lived through some sports shit, and this is, I don't expect to get it from the Lakers in this way. And yet here we are. I've seen a lot of people saying, like, you know, you have different coaches and you've had different cores, and why is it that LeBron's team has this record, and especially in the clutch? And to be frank, I think that's heliocentric offense and him not being the engine that he used to be. And that affecting the way that those teams performed in those minutes too. You have to be diverse enough to take advantage of the other team's weakest link. And in this case, the Minnesota Timberwolves' weakest link isn't Naz Reid or Julius Randle or any of these guys guarding out in space. To me, the weakest link is Gobert when he has to go and help and rotate and dig and contest and then hustle back and do all that stuff. That's when the Minnesota Timberwolves are at their worst and at their weakest, is when you turn Rudy Gobert, who is arguably the best rim protector in the history of the sport, when you turn him into somebody who has to go and cover space and make him a worse version of himself, that's how you pick on a team's weakest link. But the Lakers haven't been able to do that consistently, because they're so focused on pantsing him from, you know, in front of everybody on the perimeter. I just think you could do some of that, but you also need to do some of this and some of that and some of this over there. Like, you know, the lack of creativity, whether it's off the ball and getting the right guys coming up to set the screen without being bumped and pushed and pulled and all that stuff by the Wolves off of the ball, whether it's some of what they've done defensively hasn't really changed all that much, especially in the clutch. It's just been kind of hope and misses.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
So, yeah, I would like to see, you know, the Lakers turn this 2-11 playoff record around. But if they don't, I would also like to see us as a fan base, that team, that franchise as an organization, that basketball team, that coaching staff, take a real hard look, that superstar or those superstars between Luka and LeBron. I'd like to see those guys take a real hard look at their approach down the stretch and ask themselves the question that we're all asking, like, why is it that your offense continues to struggle down the stretch of these games? And to me, it's because while they are doing so much mismatch hunting and ISO stuff, you're completely taking the other guy out of the play. And then in Luka's case, if he's doing it, then, like, if it was LeBron matchup hunting and Nikhil Alexander-Walker was so focused on guarding Luka that he wasn't part of the play and LeBron had that much more space to work with, all right. All right, I see where you're trying to get to there. if it was Austin with the ball and it was Nikhil or not Nikhil Alexander Walker, Jaden McDaniels guarding guarding Luka, and it was Anthony Edwards making sure that LeBron doesn't catch the ball over there, and now Austin can now operate in some of the mid-range area where he has been really good this season. All right, I see where you're kind of going with there. But the problem is that it's the same setup. It's the same players involved here. It's the same players involved defensively. And it's not punishing the guys who don't have to rotate or pay attention to their guy until there's 5 seconds left in the shot clock. And then at that point, you can close out as hard as you want because you know that the player has to shoot it. You're not going to get attacked on a closeout if Rui or Dorian or even Austin or LeBron are catching the ball after the ISO creates whatever the ISO creates. You don't have to, you could just close out as hard as you want. You could jump past them because at best, after they go by you, they have one or two dribbles and then they have to get the shot up. You don't even have to worry about a rotation on the backside after the closeout gets attacked because the Lakers are taking so long to even get to their ISO stuff. It's just, it's been such a maddening series. I'm going to have a hard time. This was the first time I told this to Jen the other day. It was after game four. That Sunday night was the first time in a long time, a really long time, that I had trouble falling asleep because I could hear myself yelling at the TV, "Go, Luka, move the ball." Like, I just hear this echo in my head. So it was like, I'd kind of close my eyes and it'd be like, "Go, go." And I'm like, "Ugh." And I don't think I fell asleep until, and this was a night that I, you know, didn't have to work late because the game was so early. I don't think I fell asleep until like 1:30 or 2. And there was no reason for that to be the case. And I was just dragging ass the whole next day because it's just me by myself but with the kids working from home. And yeah, like this series is going to sit with me for a long time. And it's not a matter of me not respecting Minnesota. I want to be clear. They've had a really bleeping good series. Anthony Edwards is on an incredible trajectory as somebody who feels like the next face of basketball or somebody who's going to be competing to be the next face of basketball for the next umpteen years. You've seen this defense with Jaden McDaniels and Anthony Edwards and Nikhil Alexander Walker. And we talked about the defense that Julius Randle has been playing. And oh yeah, by the way, because of the way the Lakers are playing, they've allowed Rudy Gobert to be the best version of himself at times too. Is a really good Minnesota team. So when I say that this series is going to keep me up for a long time here moving forward, I'm not saying that as a shot at Minnesota, that the Lakers, you know, should have swept them or should have done. I was probably overly confident with the Lakers in five thing, clearly. But I definitely don't think I would have never predicted in a zillion years that this could be a potential gentleman sweep. And yet here we stand. And the reason that we stand here is because it feels like the Lakers have been one of the worst versions of themselves they could have possibly been. And it's been them just taking a shotgun to each of their feet repeatedly over the course of these games. On that note, all right, let's see. I'm going to go into some of the Twitter questions. At Bashir_1, it'll never happen, but what archetype of a player would you trade Austin for? Contract and trade value and all considered. I have thought about this way too much, and I got another question about this too. So at Michael Zhao, is AR a long-term fit? How seriously do you see the organization shopping around since he most likely won't take the extension offer? I don't think that him not taking the extension offer, I don't think that impacts how the Lakers feel about him. They love him. They love him, the guy. They remain, I believe,
prepared to offer him this max extension here. They would obviously prefer he takes said max extension because it would save them upwards of 10-ish million bucks a year for the next 4 years off of their cap. But yeah, I don't think this series has changed in any way how the Lakers feel about Austin, the basketball player, let alone Austin, the dude. Lanar asking me if I'm okay. I am struggling through this stupid coughing fit that I've been dealing with. I apologize. But anyway, all right, what would I trade Austin for? I mean, first and foremost, if Giannis becomes available, less so if KD becomes available. But all right, so if Giannis becomes available and Milwaukee says, we aren't even having a conversation about Giannis without Austin being at the top of that list, I would include Austin in that trade. And it would be bittersweet, obviously, but if Giannis is on the table and you could have a wing rotation of Luka, LeBron, and Giannis, yeah, you're kind of tight financially everywhere else on the roster, but you just kind of try to make that work. Outside of the obvious guys that we're talking about, where Giannis is a top five player, I would say, I have been thinking a lot about Austin and Luka's fit. And whether we're seeing a better version in a very different situation, a very different comparison, but a similar problem that Austin and D'Lo had, where there just isn't enough defensive wherewithal, there just isn't enough athleticism on the perimeter. Are we seeing a version of that? Let alone, by the way, the impact that ISO ball, mismatch hunt ball, Luka ball has had on the role that Austin's had in the series. Because if you're just going to put the ball in Luka's hands as often and as frequently and for as long of the possession as the Lakers have, then you're kind of wasting Austin's creativity on the ball. And Austin's shot, we've seen this in the series where he hasn't looked all that comfortable shooting on the catch with half of a second to a second less than he normally has in the regular season. And if you can turn Austin basically into, the Knicks just lost. Good. If you could turn Austin into essentially a shooting guard who can defend his ass off, is a physical, a good physical point of attack defender who can get his shot off as quickly as possible. I'm thinking, like prime Clay, right? If you get not even prime Clay, but like Clay Thompson, that archetype of player who is really, really good on defense and specifically good at the point of attack, who is a fire alarm shooter. And if you could get that kind of a player and pair him with Luka, I can kind of see that. Or if you can get a more of an athlete who, like, I was watching some clips of Dallas and Dallas last year where it was Luka and Kyrie. And the biggest difference between the creativity that we saw from Kyrie last year and the creativity that we have not necessarily seen as much of from LeBron and Austin, beyond Luka, I'm talking about. The biggest difference there is Kyrie was turning the corner on everybody. Everybody. He was blowing by people, getting into the paint, and collapsing the defense so that he would be kicking the ball out to open shooters with a whole bunch of space. Or even at sometimes he was kicking the ball out to Luka with space, which is crazy. So if you can either turn Austin into a better point of attack defender who was a knockdown shooter, or if you could turn Austin essentially into another ball handler who is more equipped athletically to go by guys and get into the paint and wreak havoc that way, then I can kind of see it. But I would be kind of bummed, because I think that Austin and Luka can work. Like, how often have we seen Austin come up and set a screen for Luka the way that Austin was coming up and setting a screen for LeBron last season? It just hasn't happened. And if Austin is coming up to set a screen, it's always that ghost drag screen that, you know, he barely touches the defender and he rotates out, pops his hips out, and he hopes to catch that pass from Luka on the perimeter, makes himself available to Luka on the perimeter. But the point is to get whoever is guarding Austin guarding Luka there. And there just hasn't been very much creativity there either. So ideally, the Lakers extend Austin, and the coaching staff takes a hard look at what they haven't been able to do with Austin and with Luka on the court at the same time, and they find a way to get more creative there, and the offense becomes more dynamic as a result. But if that isn't in the cards, if that isn't possible, and by the way, I hope we do get a nice shuffling of the deck with the assistant coaches this year. Any set of assistant coaches who doesn't step up there to tell Redick that's a really bad idea to not have any subs in the second half, you're not worth your weight in lead. So I would hope that they get an offensive engineer, basically, to put together a system that, and hopefully Luka signs off on this system too. But you find a way to take advantage of Austin's on the ball skills, which have gotten better over every step of his career to this point, and may get better again this offseason. You find a way to make Austin and Luka work, because if you basically tweak the Austin part of this, that's energy that you're not spending on the center spot. That's energy that you're not spending on bringing in more athleticism to your three spot. So, I would say, as far as all of the questions about Austin, he's been bad. I've had a lot of people asking me, like, why aren't you saying that Austin has been bad? I feel like I've been pretty hard on Austin. I've offered context as to why I think Austin has been bad, on top of him just being bad, and on top of him being overwhelmed by the physicality. But people like accusing me of caping up for Austin, I'm really not. I feel like I'm a pretty fair guy, and I've been pretty fair with Austin. And I would hope that the Lakers find a way to make it work with him, not just this summer with an extension, which again I think that Austin is going to turn down for the sake of becoming a free agent at the end of next year. But if they're able to work out that extension and they're able to bring in a screener who Austin can work with too. That's been the other part of this problem with Jackson Hayes, is because Hayes has been so bad, they don't even have a pick and roll partner for, like, nobody has a pick and roll partner. The only pick and roll partner that they've, you know, tried to fit a square peg into the round hole here with has been Vanderbilt. We haven't seen much of that. Again, when was the last time we saw an Austin LeBron pick and roll? And especially of the North and South variety. It's been a really frustrating series. And I think Austin has drawn a lot of fair criticism, but I think a lot of people are getting kind of carried away on Austin without taking into account how poor a series the coaching staff has had. All right. Let's see. Oh, this is a fun, this is kind of interesting way. So Fred Joel 99 asks, would you play Hayes in the minutes when his foul trouble doesn't affect us, i.e. the Lakers are already in the bonus? Yes and no, because you would kind of like to be able to waste the fouls and not just give away points every time Jackson sets a bad screen or pushes somebody when he shouldn't be, and just kind of loses his head. But I can kind of see where you're going there. My bigger thing is the Lakers are going to get in the bonus eventually anyway. So are the Wolves. It's been a really physical series. And if teams don't get into the bonus, that's because the referees are refereeing like this. Right. So my thing is, if Hayes picks up two quick fouls in the first quarter, who gives a shit? He's going to play 8 minutes anyway. Keep him out there. Or if you start, I have a feeling JJ's going to start the five-man lineup for the from the second half of last game. And here's the thing, and I saw Pete and Darius kind of made this point. Didn't get all the way there. I was like, come on, go one more step. But they were essentially like, all right, if you were prepared to make that adjustment, then you needed to do it. Doing it in only the second half makes it so that you are kind of up against it in terms of minutes that you can spare in the second half. What I think, I'm not going to put words in their mouths, but I can certainly say from my vantage point, what I would have preferred, as I've said all series, even coming into the series, I would have preferred that they start those five guys, Luka, Austin, LeBron, Rui, and Dorian, or Vando. I know. But if you start those five guys that finish that second half or play that whole second half, if you start those guys and then you bring in Jackson to be the screener in that second unit lineup, that makes a lot of sense to me. We never saw it in the second half. And part of the reason we didn't see it in the second half is because all of those minutes become higher and higher leverage over the course of the second half. So you can't quite waste a couple of Jackson Hayes minutes in the third quarter because you have that much less time to make up for whatever mistakes he makes. But if you start the game with those five guys and then go to Jackson Hayes there and it doesn't work out, then you have the whole rest of the game to make up for it. You're only going to play, if you're prepared to only play Jackson 4 minutes of it anyway, then let those 4 minutes come in a situation where he's more ideally used or he's going up against lineups where he can be a little bit more useful. I don't know. Coaching's hard though. I will say this, and I think, like I asked the question earlier, what would JJ Redick, the podcaster, say about JJ Redick, the head coach? I think the one thing that JJ would probably say after this entire endeavor is, holy shit, this is a lot harder than podcasters think. And he's right. It's easy for me to sit here on my leather couch, you know, or on my leather office chair, or on my lazy boy in my living room. Like wherever I'm watching this game, it's a lot easier for me to be like, come on, where's this? Like it's a hell of a lot easier to do that. And I would imagine JJ Redick after this experience would, you know, acknowledge and admit that. That said, there's no more time for learning experiences here. There's no more time for lessons that teaching lessons that the Lakers can build on here moving forward. You have this year and next year before Austin gets paid. You have this year and next year before the end of LeBron's career really zooms into clarity. Like this is the window that the Lakers have. And if you waste half of that window because the rookie head coach is that severely outcoached in the series or because the roster is that bad, that makes this season pretty painful. And I hope we avoid that. All right, that is going to do it that's going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers Lounge Podcast. Thank you, everybody, for the questions, for the comments, for the listens, for everything over the course of the season. I previewed the game a little bit. I might do a little more of that on the Lowdown, which is an RSS feed exclusive. So check that out whenever that runs. And then, next time I talk to you, we'll either be hopefully staring off into the distance at a potential comeback from 3-1, or assessing the season as it was and preparing for what promises to be, whether no matter how the series goes, this offseason is going to be must watch, must listen every minute of every day while we wait to see what the roster looks like next year. But I hope we get another at least couple games before we have to think about that. And ideally, couple series. We'll see. Have a good one, everybody.